Welcome, listeners, to a brand new bonus episode of Oh My Word Podcast. And today, brace yourselves. Amazingly special treat that we have. Our guest with us today is Sarah Schoenfeld, and she is an editor at HarperCollins, specifically with Katherine Kagan Books. And so, Sarah, welcome. Welcome, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
I am so thrilled. Okay, so let's get started as we always do. How do you go from, you know, walking around in your life and deciding, you know what, I'm going to be an editor. That's what I want to do.
You know, I went through most of my life not even knowing that was really a career path. I went to college. I was one of those kids who didn't know what I wanted to do with my life, and I decided to just try out everything. And I quickly realized that my English classes were my favorite, and I thought to myself, oh no, I'm going to be an English major. I come from a family of doctors and lawyers and teachers, and I was like, oh, how do I break this to them? But I was lucky enough to go to school close enough to the New York area that I had some teachers who were actually in publishing.
Oh.
And I was chatting with them at office hours, and they said, you know, this is a career that you really might want to consider. And I dragged my feet. I tried to avoid it. I thought about being a journalist for a while. So I wrote for some newspapers, interned, and I found myself sort of hating the short turnaround and wishing that I could really dig into a story. So went from newspapers to magazines, as one does, and really continued my internship journey and found myself still wanting to work in books. So it was my third internship that I finally got it right, and ended up at Penguin Random House learning about books, and I couldn't leave. I loved it so much. It was such a pleasure to get to sit down and really work with an author, work with an editor, because when I was starting out, it was more of an assistant, sort of working alongside someone, and it was just such a joy. And I've been in publishing for almost 6 years now, and I'm loving every day of it.
Wow. Growing up, were you a reader growing up, that you always wanted to, that was sort of always there, and you never realized it was already a sign?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I remember at one point I got grounded from reading. My parents said, you're reading too much, no more, and they took my books away, and I remember sneaking them around. I would read while walking around and hide that from my parents, which I was really a rebel. you know, I enjoyed writing too as a kid, which I think, you know, it's such a great way to, it gives me an interesting perspective as an editor, because I do write. I published a picture book called Birthday on Mars, which is very relevant for today, with the Mars landing.
Yeah.
So I do think that helps me a little bit, because I know that writing is such a scary process for everyone involved. You know, you're really bearing your soul. And I started off writing with my older sister. We would sit and write novels back and forth. And she still writes to this day. I help her with querying, and I still write, and she helps me. So in a way, I've been editing my whole life, if you count sort of editing my sister's work when I was, you know, a little kid. I haven't stopped reading. I did get shamed for a little bit with my latest move. My mover said to me, you know, you have too many books. I'm very sorry. They're very heavy.
And you're like, that's not an option. There's no such thing as too many books. You know how many millions there are in the world? There are not too many.
Yeah, I still want more. You know, I think I always am going to have a wish list going of the books that I can't wait to read.
Yeah.
And every time I get something new in my inbox, it's adding to that list. There's so many incredible books out there and so many incredible authors. I'm almost sad that I can't edit all of them.
Right. Well, let's just, out of curiosity, so I have to go back to this a second. You got grounded from reading. Like, what were you supposed to do instead? It's not like, don't read and go watch TV, or what was it? Or is it just because you were walking around with a book and it was like, stop walking with your book?
I think they were like, have you seen people? Have you looked someone in the eyes in the past week? I had nerdy friends growing up. We would have little book clubs and sit and read the same books together. So it was a social activity. And I think reading is always a social activity. Even if you're not reading in a book club or with someone else, you're interacting with the characters and you're learning about different human experiences. So I think I had a great childhood, even though, you know, in my spare time I was, as a second grader, volunteering at the library, and, you know, everything about my life was about books, and it still is. No regrets.
Right, that's amazing. Like, it sounds so wonderful. That you said that you did the journalism a little bit between, I guess, before you decided, oh, I want to dive deeper into a story. So what made the change from, instead of you writing the novel, you figured you'd be editing the novel instead?
I was thinking about this the other day, because I I'm coming up on my 10-year high school reunion and thinking about what it was like to be in high school all those years ago. And I remembered I had this very close friend who was an excellent writer. I'm sure she still is. And I would work with her on homework. You know, you get to get with your friends and you sit and you do homework together. And we would exchange essays and edit them. I remember one time I got a not so great grade on the essay. For me, not so great. It was like a B. And my teacher said, you know, you really should write more like your classmate. Her writing is so concise and clear, and it's just so polished. And I remember sitting there going, I edited that essay. You know, I helped her get there. And I realized, you know, maybe as much as I love writing and it's still a passion of mine, maybe part of my talent is helping people who have the ideas find a way to get it across, because I think that's so much of what authors do. You know, everyone has a story inside of them, and what makes someone an author is the ability to take what's in their head and put it in someone else's head, which is really an amazing gift. And if I can help be the conduit for that, if I can help find a way to make it a better experience for both people, the storyteller and the reader, then I've really succeeded, and it's so rewarding to help bring that into the world.
Right. Amazing. And your focus now is really between picture books, middle grade, young adult, basically the younger ages of the in the writing world. Is that something that you specifically chose, or it was the opportunity came up and then now it's what you love to do sort of thing?
Sure. So when I was in college, I took a lot of children's writing courses. Part of it was because, you know, at the time I was a child and I wasn't reading widely in adults. And I think in order to really be good at writing and at editing, you have to read widely.
Yeah.
I still don't like reading adult books, and I still prefer to read kids' books. There's something about the idea that you can really shape someone's worldview and their experience. I also love that a lot of the books I work on have a message or a theme and do have sort of a moral obligation to help kids become the best versions of themselves. And we're having so many discussions right now in publishing about representation. And I think the idea of mirrors, windows, and sliding glass doors, the idea that you can see yourself, you can see others, you can see maybe something you're not a part of, but learn about it. I think all of those are just so important. And I do appreciate that in children's books, we're kind of the forefront of that. We're really the change makers and pushing that forward. And I'm just honored to be a part of it, and grateful that I have the opportunity to help raise up voices and give kids the representation that could make them into great adults.
Wow. So sort of along that line, because I've been wondering about this, every editor, well, I don't know if you have a general number, like about how many other editors are in the imprint with you?
We're a very small imprint. So before I was on a team that had, you know, more like 10 to 15 editors at a time.
Right.
And now, you know, there are less than 5 of us, and it's a very different experience.
Yeah.
I personally prefer working on a smaller team because we know each other so well and we really can share what we're working on. So I'm never editing something by myself. I can always send a jabber to one of my coworkers and get their opinion. And oftentimes I do have my coworkers read what I'm working on to sort of get another take. And editing is such a personal process, but it also requires so much decision-making that can be so subjective. And I do appreciate that I'm not always the ultimate approver of all of these elements. I do like sharing it because my reader isn't just one person. I want a book to appeal to a variety of kids and maybe sometimes even some adults. And it's helpful to have that sort of synergy, for lack of a better word.
Right. So because part of that is usually each editor has their own wish list of whatever they're looking for. But if you're on a team of editors, and I suppose whoever's, you know, the big editor who's above you, how much of that is by choice that you get to do that? Or sometimes the imprint says, we need more X, and so who's going to take on looking for more of X? Or, like, how does that work?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's one of the really interesting things about publishing, because when you start out, it really is an apprenticeship, and getting that first job and getting your foot in the door is such a long and complicated process. Right. I know I worked at Barnes & Noble for a while and applied everywhere until I found an editor that I really connected to and she really connected to me. And some of that is subjective, and maybe we need to reevaluate what that process looks like. But also it's so important to be able to share with someone interests and passions in what a finished book looks like on your list.
Right.
And so some of some of the reason that I did end up moving teams, my first job was so amazing, and I loved the chance to work on such a variety of books. But the imprint ended up rebranding, and I realized that maybe it wasn't the best match anymore.
Right.
So when I went looking for jobs, a lot of it was sitting down with the publisher and saying, what hole do you have in your publishing right now? What would I be bringing to the team? Mm-hmm. And also doing some soul searching and figuring out what could I bring to the team? What did I want to bring to the team? And I interviewed with Catherine, and it was such an amazing experience to connect with someone about books and to realize that, you know, what I found appealing about the job was the same thing that drew her to it. And it was just such a pleasure, and it's really a joy working with her every day and being able to say, I loved this, I read a sentence of it, and I couldn't put it down, and for her to say, I see exactly the same thing that you see in this, which, again, pros and cons, because it can create an echo chamber, and we can't just be sitting there going, this is the best thing I've ever seen.
Right.
But also some of it is knowing that I can learn from her and learn from all of her experience and her amazing backlist and hopefully grow into an editor like her one day.
Oh, amen.
Hopefully.
Yeah. So also, just to shift a little bit, your main job as an editor, I think when a lot of people think of editors, there's kind of like a dual perspective of it, because a lot of people will think like, oh, the editor has to correct grammar or catch word mistakes or whatever, but that's really more proofreaders and copywriters and things like that. That's not what the editor does. So when you're getting a manuscript, what's your main job once you're saying, okay, I see this book, this manuscript has potential, but what's your main job now at that point?
I like to think about being an editor, like being the director on a film. I'm not the main talent. I'm not the person on the poster. It's my job to get the best performance out of the talent and make them really shine. So I'm going to work with all of the departments at the publishing house and coordinate the team efforts to turn their amazing idea into this beautiful finished product. So that can mean everything from being able to spot something in my inbox and figure out, oh, this is the best thing that I can bring. I can give this book so much of a leg up. I can figure out how to fit it into my list. I can give it all of the help that it needs to become a book, and that includes things from, you know, advocating about the book to my internal team. So that's the acquisitions process, stepping up and saying, I really think I could turn this into a book. That happens with design when we're talking about what the cover's going to look like, but also what the interior is going to look like. It happens with marketing and publicity and sales. And all of the times that I'm really championing this book, I always talk about, you know, like nights, and I'm going to war for this book. I'm stepping up and I'm going to be the champion. So a lot of the times when I am rejecting something, it's not an assessment of the quality of the book. It's not a commentary on the author's skill. It's more about what can I do for this book? Can I really bring this to the most readers and put it on shelves in the right way?
Right. I didn't realize, now that you just said that, because I know a lot of times, especially in the bigger companies, authors don't necessarily have a say in their cover design, unless, you know, they absolutely hate it or they don't really have that much input. But you do have a lot of input in that, because you're overseeing all those parts.
Yeah, so that's my role. I do have a fair amount of influence. Now, when I say I'm working with these teams, obviously the people I'm working with are just amazing experts in their field, and I'm generally going to defer to them.
Right.
So sometimes authors will ask me, well, how do you deal with an argument? Like, if I say this and the designer says this, what do you do? And I say, well, there's a reason the designer's saying that.
Yeah.
They have years of experience, and I would ask why. Why are you resisting the amazing advice they're giving? What makes you uncomfortable about it, and sort of figure that out. But yeah, I do tend to be the type of editor that I try to always ask questions. That's one of my favorite things to do, check in with people, see how they're doing. But also, whenever possible, I want to keep my authors looped in, because at the end of the day, it's their book. Their name is on the cover. It's their child. And I want to make sure that they absolutely love it and they understand that every choice I'm making is because I want to give it the best shot out there possible.
Right. Is negotiating contracts also on you, or that gets deferred to a different department?
So we handle that, especially for big picture things, advanced territory, things like that. When it gets into very minutia, sometimes, you know, you're dealing with contracts more. But I am very hands-on. I do prefer to be kept in every conversation and be up to speed with all of my books, because I do want to be that intermediary whenever possible who's advocating for the author and for the book.
Yeah. And did that also include, I actually just thought of this now, like for international sales, because HarperCollins has branches all over the world, but you're all separate. You're all working independently. Is there ever, you know, an editor across, you know, across the pond that you're like, hey, we got to get this book out, or is that somebody else's job to take care of that?
So we have a sub-rights team, and they will be sending the book out. But when we were in the office chatting with those people, obviously things are a little different now.
Yeah.
But they are, again, just so incredible at their job, and they know exactly what editors to reach out to. So in those processes, I'm not involved every single step of the way. They do an amazing job handling it, but it is always a pleasure to be able to write to my author and say, guess what, you know?
Yeah.
Your book's going to be in a different language, so it's always fun.
Amazing. Does it go through, does it just go through a translator at that point, or there has to be a new editor who has to step in?
It depends on the territory.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it does vary quite a bit. Sometimes there is another editor involved, and I'm trying to think of a book that I've specifically worked on that happened. I've definitely co-edited things or assisted on projects where there are simultaneous publications in other countries.
Right.
And it's always a fun process. I don't think necessarily more editors is a bad thing. We always joke, publishing is very slow. So I think every time you add an editor, you know, it's another week.
Yes. That's actually like an interesting thing, because sometimes you might pick up a book, I'm like, everything has a time frame, even though it's very slow. I'm like, how do you get to the point where you're like, we've spent enough time on this, it has to go out? Or do you not get to that point? Or is it just a feeling?
So some books we want to publish for a specific season. If it's a holiday book, if I think it ties into a specific emotion or feeling with a season, I might push for a specific on sale date. Certainly, we do move books. And a lot of that does happen during that first drafting process, where we want to make sure the author likes where it is. And especially with COVID, I've seen a lot of authors get overwhelmed and say, you know, I'm not in the mood to write. Okay. And that's totally fine. Like, there's so much flexibility. Another thing I always say is, it's a book. It's not an emergency.
Right.
Yeah. The book will happen when the book happens.
Right.
And the key thing is to get it right and to have everyone really love it. On the other side of that, you know, we do work in passes. So we'll see a manuscript maybe 3 or 4 times before it becomes an interior, so it's all laid out. And then we might see that 5 times before it goes to print. So we're looking at it a lot of times. And some authors do really want to make changes the whole time. And one of the things that I do like to remind authors, I'm not the only one looking at this ever. There are always copy editors, proofreaders, designers, layout, you know, there's just so many different people looking at it. So it does become a little bit of a machine that has to, we got to keep it going. And agonizing over a small word choice, at some point you have to put it down and walk away and know that what you've done is amazing. And if you say, you know, orange or teal, it's not going to really matter.
Right. Right. What do you do with, either because the author is being hard-headed in general or just hard-headed about a specific change? Is this sort of like a pick your battles as long as the overall book is good, or there are certain things that it's like, you must change this or we can't put it out? And not something that's you know, also that's not appropriate. As far as it's appropriate, but like it either doesn't make sense amount of the story, or they're pulling like on a magic wand that's not that shouldn't be pulled out. You know, sort of those kinds of changes, not things that really should like have to be changed, you know?
Yes, I mean, most of the times that I do, I don't want to say fight, but I will dig my heels in if it's something that I do feel could be damaging or upsetting to a child.
Right.
I know that sometimes, this is like a long debate that we're having, but, you know, do you use a bad word in your book because kids hear them and see them, you know, for example, like slurs?
Right.
Or do you write elliptically and sort of imply that it's happening?
Right.
And I tend to lean towards the why trigger someone if you don't have to.
Right.
If you're using it for shock value, that's not a great reason. Especially interrogating questions of who the author is, why they're picking to have that moment in their book. In terms of, you know, the magic wand example, I think a lot of that, I do end up asking a lot of questions. Clarity is something that I'm very passionate about, I think. Having clear world building really
right.
helps make a book accessible, especially
right.
to younger readers. The younger the reader, the more likely they are to get frustrated or put the book down if it's just not connecting. So I will certainly sometimes ask questions and push a little bit, but I think with all the authors I've worked with, they're so aware of their audience. And they're so great at crafting these worlds that, you know, if I raise a question and they say, I think it's clear, we don't need to say anymore, I trust them. And I am willing to work with them and figure out, you know, if I'm confused, why is that happening? Could we clarify somewhere else? And in my experience, there's always a middle ground, and there's always a way to walk away with everyone happy.
Well, that's good. That's good to know. Everyone gets...
So far.
You're right, right. Because everyone gets so worried with editors, and just for, like, for myself, I think I actually like the editing better than the writing stage, because the writing stage, you just get the words out already. You can't do anything until the words are out. So, yeah. But that, yeah. Everyone gets so afraid, oh, they're going to change whatever I wrote, they're going to change whatever I wrote, but it's like, then why did the editor pick you up, I guess, so.
Yeah, at the end of the day, I think every author and every writer needs to remember how many people have loved their book for it to get to any stage, you know, even if you're just having beta readers, the amount of love that someone's putting in to sit down and read your manuscript is just incredible. And if you do end up getting an editor, this person is to a degree sort of saying, this is something that I love, and maybe somewhat staking their career on it and arguing in front of a group of people about why they love it so much. Anything that I'm editing, range acquisitions, is something that I really do feel passionate about. And all of my changes are just trying to uncover the sort of the gem that I see there, just clean it up.
Amazing. So what's on an average day, just a little bit in brief, on an average day, what does kind of an average day look like? Like how many manuscripts are you actually looking at on an average day between all the different stages that each one might be in? How much of it is it phone calls or, you know, dealing with all the departments and stuff? Like, what does an average day look like?
With our work-from-home scenario, I do tend to spend a good, like, the first 3 hours of my day just responding to email.
Wow.
We all get a lot of email. It's just,
wow.
It's just what happens. And I do split my time. I am, you know, an assistant editor, so I both assist and I edit. And so some of that is paperwork. HarperCollins and many of the big publishing houses are very corporate. So we do a lot of forms, and we love it. It's really useful. Again, I think it's great to sort of have that structure. You're not just pulling things out of thin air. You're sitting down. You're figuring things out based on numbers and facts and figures for previous books, which is why comps are so important. But yeah, and then I'll look at passes. So I'll see covers. I'll see interiors. Occasionally, we'll see ads, stuff like that. And a lot of it is communicating that with other people, passing it along, making sure the eyes that see it. And then I like to spend my afternoon editing. I think that's like a really great productive time for me. And I lately enjoy sitting, you know, with a cup of tea and maybe a cookie, and I'll sit and edit the manuscript that I have. And then towards the end of the day, I'll read submissions, because I think that's a great way to wrap up my day. And if some days we do have meetings, of course, that sort of punctuate my day. So we have, you know, acquisitions will be in the morning, but we might look at jackets in the afternoon. And those are really great, too. It's nice to see my coworkers. I do miss them and chat with them. But it's also really useful to hear what other people are saying about their own book. Maybe not even mine, maybe not from my team, but to sort of see what's going on.
Well, I got stuck on the 3 hours of emails. Wow.
Yeah.
But that...
Yeah, it can be rough.
Right. But it does, it sounds like, though, that does include not just people, anybody who might reach out to you, you know, to come on a podcast, for example, but also anything with, that could include production of the book also is also included in
some
of those emails.
Yeah, because we're sending everything over email. Before, we would have physical inboxes, and I do miss seeing the physical passes of things. But yeah, going to my inbox now, it's just one process that does include sort of seeing all the new stuff that people send over, but also answering questions from people.
Do you print out a manuscript to do edits on that, or you're doing a track changes in Word, or how do you do that?
So up until very recently, I was quarantining with my family, and they had a printer, and that was very nice. I'm back in my apartment, so I do not have a printer.
Oh.
So I'm working, I have an iPad that I'll use, and then because I'm not very tech savvy, I'll handwrite some of my comments if it's big picture stuff.
Right.
So for a first read of a manuscript, I might start my edit letter by just scribbling down notes. And then for a more intense sort of second pass on a manuscript, I'll work in track changes and comments, which I think it's certainly quicker in some ways to work directly into track changes as opposed to before I would mark up a manuscript and copy those over.
Yeah.
But it's also slower in some ways because working on technology just creates a boundary, and I do miss the physical pages. I'm one of those people, I prefer the physical book. I like holding it in my hand.
Yeah. Well, that's just kind of going back to acquisitions and things like that, and you know, the direction of the imprint. Because we all know that usually when, or maybe most people, some of us know, that when you're signing a book, it's a year or two in advance that you're signing it. So Are you signing it just, how much are you looking to the future versus, I really like this book, I don't see so many of it right now, so I'm just going to sign it, like, and not even like try to predict what the future is going to hold.
Yeah, I mean, that's been particularly interesting, especially with COVID and all that's happening. I know that we're seeing a big change in how people are buying books. You know, I think about this a lot. I miss Midlist, and I do hope that people find new ways to discover books. And I do get frustrated sometimes that bestsellers are great, and I love them, and everyone should read them.
Right.
But you should also try something new and go out on a limb and try a book that you haven't heard of before. Be a little adventurous. Imagine you're at a bookstore. You can't go to a bookstore.
Right.
So, yeah, it is changing a little bit how we think about books. You know, a thing that I'll say a lot in rejections is, like, I can't figure out a way to help make this book stand out in the marketplace. Like, what can I see as the main hook, as a way to push this book to get readers really excited about it? And that's hard, you know, because you're looking 2 years ahead. What will people be, what does 2 years ahead even look like?
No one knows. Right.
So a lot of it for me is, do I love this book? Do I love every moment of it? And maybe not every moment of it, but am I just really enamored with the characters and the plot? And can I pivot if I need to find a way to position it? And I had a very interesting thing happen where I was editing a book that was about kind of a pandemic, like a little bit. And it ended up coming out last month. And we did not plan on this. This was not intentional. And it just, the author was so great about making something relatable and making it feel grounded and talking about really timeless problems that people face, like self-confidence and being your own person, that it really landed, I think, still really well, despite the fact that we were all living this experience
right.
and could be hypercritical in a way that we hadn't expected. So, yeah, and the one time that I am looking forward to the future is, you know, I jokingly tweeted out that we're coming up on the anniversary of, like, King Tut's tomb discovery.
Right.
I'd love to see more books like that. And sure, there are anniversaries that come up that I think are really relevant, but most of the time I'm not looking through my inbox and, you know, scrolling 2 years ahead and saying, okay, you know,
right,
what's it going to look like
right.
2023? That's not a real year. That's not.
Right. Sort of like a sidebar, are there any either sort of plots or character types or something that you're like, please stop sending these to me? It's just not different anymore, or I just personally just don't like them? Or you could say the flip, is there anyone that I have such a weakness for this that even if it's not a specific something I usually will edit, but if it has it in it, then I will totally go for the book?
I think I have seen some books that are lovely, and I'm sure another editor would love them, but for me it just feels like you can tell the author's heart isn't in it and they're trying to capitalize on a trend.
Okay.
So I would always say, don't write to a trend unless it's really dear to your heart. You really want to be your authentic self and tell your authentic story. Some of the things I love. I love a good mystery, and I would really hope to see more of that in my inbox. What else? I love stories that sort of reflect what we're dealing with today in a way that is in an exciting story. So I love things that have an adventure A plot, and then the B plot is something that, you know, teaches kids or affirms who they are or uplifts them in a way that they haven't been. I love those stories so much. They're so lovely when you can kind of sneak that in and the kids think that they're, you know, running around hunting ghosts, but actually they're learning to be better friends and be better people.
Right. Right. Well, and just one more thing, and then unfortunately we have to wrap up. You did warn me this, you could talk about books for hours, but you know, I'm there too.
I really could.
Yeah. For for the things that you read outside of work, do you read the sort of stuff that you edit, or do you purposely go in a different direction?
I definitely do both. I mean, recently I've been looking for a lot of really escapist books, which I think is also so much in demand. I think readers want that too. And I've been trying to dip my toe into the horror world and read some adult books that were very scary.
Yeah.
Very upsetting. But I did enjoy them, and I'm trying to be less of a wuss when it comes to scary stories, because I think horror is such an interesting way to subtly talk about anxieties for a specific moment or culture, right, or experience. So it's really fascinating. So I have been trying that out a little bit. And, you know, there is a pressure as an editor to try to read not only widely the type of books that I edit, but also the type of books I might want to edit,
right,
or things that are just a little bit adjacent. So I do have an endless TBR of books that, oh, like, maybe I could try this out, and maybe this would be a fit for me. And then it does feel a little bit like multitasking. Like, it's fun, I'm enjoying it, but also I'm learning.
Do you have your editor's brain on when you're reading, or you know how to turn that off and just enjoy the book?
Sometimes I'm pretty good about not putting books down. I think part of my skill as an editor is I can figure out what I'm going to like before I get too invested. So if I buy a book, I generally love it and want to finish it. But I do occasionally think, you know, oh, this is, I would cut this scene, it's going on a little bit too long.
Right.
And then, you know, I keep those in mind because it's so useful when talking to agents to say, like, okay, here's a book I loved. Here's a book that I think is on the threshold of maybe a little bit too wordy for me. And here's a book where I didn't love the characterization. So, yeah, it's all useful.
I just had this question just popped into my head, even though I know I said we're going to wrap up, but now I just popped it to my head because you did mention comp titles earlier with some of the forms, mm-hmm, and stuff you have to do. Because for comp titles, sometimes, at least this has just been my experience, sometimes I can't think of a comp title, not because, oh, my book is so unique and no one in the entire world has ever written it, but I haven't read every single book in the world yet. So, mm-hmm, when you're looking at comp titles, like, you don't exactly want something that's exactly the same, or what are you kind of, like, what are you kind of looking at in the comp title? Like, oh, this one has, like, the protagonist go on similar journeys, not necessarily that the plot's the same, or it could be anything for a comp title. Like, are there specific rules for comp titles?
Yeah. Comp titles are an art, and I do enjoy them. When I was first starting out, I struggled with them a lot because it is about building that knowledge base. But I think a good comp title is published within the past 5 to 10 years, so you want it to be recent.
Okay.
You definitely want the genre to match. So age range, type of book, that has to match. And then the way that I pick comp is I think, what do I love about this book? What's my elevator pitch? What's my key selling point? If I had 5 seconds to tell someone about this book, what would I highlight? Would I talk about the voice? Would I talk about the character? Would I talk about the plot? And then I try to find books that kind of mirror that. And I know the classic is, you say, X meets Y.
Right.
But I think for a lot of comps, you really can find something that has that similar vibe, that similar taste to it. And I think for people who are struggling with comp, go out there and read, and just remember that no one's trying to reinvent the wheel here. We're all trying to build on each other. And you've read a book, so you have been influenced by people out there who are writing, and you can sort of continue that by finding good comp.
Cool. That's good to know, because I feel like I'm in an ocean when it comes to comps. So that's good. Thank you.
Goodreads has a lot of lists on them. So if you can, you know, there are tricks, you know, you can, if you find one book, you can see what other people bought that book alongside other books. You can look at lists that people have curated. And then, you know, sometimes you can also look through advertising and see what other books are being advertised with it.
There are
a lot of tricks.
Yes. Good point. Although any of the trees of, if you like this, you'll also like this, is basically a comp title. Wow. Okay. Good to know. Yay. All right. Good. So before we fully wrap up here, I always have, you know, my phone is blank of, I love it when writers, editors, agents, other editors, publishers do X, and I really don't like it when they do X. How would you fill in the blank for both of those?
Sure. So I really love it when writers are interested in building a relationship with whoever they're working with their editor, with their agent, with their publishing house, because I'm early in my career. I'm passionate about moving forward and sort of continuing with the people that I'm working with. So I think it's really worth putting the time in to invest in that relationship and be as comfortable as you can be. On the flip side, things that I don't like that authors do, I'm always sad when authors don't ask me the questions that they have and, you know, feel uncomfortable. Like, please, I'm here as a resource. I'm here for you. My job in many ways is to represent you to all of the other people that I'm talking with. So I encourage authors to always ask the questions. Sometimes your agent will want to, you know, be involved with that too. But I just encourage remembering that it's a relationship and we're all working together on this book, which is your book, and finding a way to work together in a way that's comfortable for everyone.
Right. Very good. All right. Well, Sarah, thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for joining us on our podcast. And I'm so glad we're able to have you. This was a bonus episode of Oh My Word Podcast featuring editor Sarah Schoenberg. To find out more about Oh My Word Podcast and to keep track of all the great stuff we're up to, please follow us on Instagram at Oh My Word Podcast or visit us online at eltenenbaum.com. Thanks so much for joining us. Catch you next time.